Before listening to this story, please press pause and read Matthew chapter 2, verses 1 to 12. Then the story will last a little over 10 minutes and will be followed by a short reflection and a prayer. I still can't explain why we did it, why we travelled all that way on a whim. We had easy, comfortable lives. We were all from wealthy families. And when our fathers died, we were going to inherit more money and be given power over the people and land that belonged to us. In the main, we were obedient children, but secretly we were all critical of the way our fathers wielded power. Everything they did was based on hierarchy and fear. They kept control over their slaves, their tenants, their extended family, their children and their wives, by simply assuming and acting as if they were stronger, cleverer, and more important than everyone else. It would have been very easy for us simply to accept this way of doing things. But we were young, restless, and idealistic. We wondered if there was a better way. We talked together, we read extensively, and we travelled. It was while we were doing all this exploration that we went to Jerusalem. Caspar had read some obscure writings which suggested that a new king for the Jewish people would be born near Jerusalem. At the same time, we noticed a new star in the night sky over towards Jerusalem. That was enough for us, so we set off. We had some vague notion that as the Jewish people had a reputation for doing things differently, it was worth going to make a visit. Their God did not favour emperors and the elite like the gods of other nations. Their God favoured a poor, enslaved, rootless people, liberated them, and gave them a new land to inhabit. We thought we may learn something new about leadership and power from their new king, who was to be, some believed, the Messiah, the Anointed One. Our information was vague, and following a star is not a precise way of navigating. So, when we arrived in Jerusalem, we used our wealth and prestige to arrange an audience with King Herod. His advisers told him the new king was to be born in Bethlehem, a small village on the outskirts of Jerusalem, so we headed there. Strangely enough, we hadn't talked much about what we were expecting, but I suppose if someone had asked us, we thought we would discover something grand, a big house, a rich and powerful family like ours, and lots of people celebrating a significant birth. If this was going to be a great leader with new insights into how power, wealth, and leadership should be wielded, then his birth was going to be a big event. Bethlehem was only a small village, we were told, so this new king should not be too difficult to find, or so we thought. It was dark when we arrived. The whole village seemed to be sleeping. The Romans were conducting a census, which meant that everyone had to travel to the place where they were born. This meant that a large number of family reunions were taking place in Bethlehem. If we had arrived earlier in the evening, we would have seen families doing what families do when they gather, eating, drinking, laughing, and arguing. By the time we got there, they had all fallen asleep, exhausted, or drunk. The problem for us was that there was nothing happening in Bethlehem at all. There appeared to be no big houses, no signs of celebration about the birth of a baby. We walked aimlessly, not quite knowing what we were looking for, when suddenly Melchior bumped into some shepherds. He immediately assumed that they would be drunk, heading back to their flocks in the hills to sleep off all the wine they'd consumed in the village. But they hadn't been drinking. Melchior, embarrassed, explained what we were looking for, expecting them to laugh and make fun of us. Instead, they embraced him like an old friend and gave him directions to an inn. They seemed to know exactly what we were looking for. The inn appeared to be locked up, with everyone inside asleep. So we walked around the outside, wondering what to do. It was then that we heard some people talking quietly and the unmistakable sound of a hungry baby. Around the back, in the stable, we found an anxious man, an exhausted woman, and the hungry baby. We thought about simply walking away. This was not what we were looking for. It seemed as though a young couple had come to Bethlehem for the census, found nowhere to stay, and then the woman had given birth in a stable round the back of an inn. This was no king. We weren't going to learn anything here about leadership, wealth, and power. All we would learn here would be about grinding poverty and the human capacity to survive in the midst of endless risk and struggle. But something made us stay and rest. Despite all that was happening to him, the anxious man extended hospitality to us, offering us some cheap, weak wine he had in a skin and a few pieces of bread. The exhausted woman sat in the corner of the stable, feeding the hungry baby, as we talked quietly to the anxious man, who managed to be both attentive to the woman and welcoming to us strangers in his home, even though his home for the time being was a borrowed stable. As we talked, we learnt that he was distantly related to the greatest Jewish king, David. That was why he was in Bethlehem for the census. David had been born in Bethlehem. Slowly we began to feel that we might be in the right place after all. Maybe there were lessons for us to learn simply by being here in this stable. A family's love, the welcoming of strangers, simple hospitality, and a new king, utterly vulnerable, totally dependent on his parents to survive, all making us feel that life, whether it's lived in poverty and weakness, or wealth and power, is ultimately all about simple things. As the first glimmers of dawn began to glow in the dark sky, we decided we should leave the little family. We were not sure, but we were beginning to feel that we'd learnt much from them, and in response to their simple generosity to us, we looked in our possessions to give them some gifts. I found some gold that would surely help them a little. Caspar found some frankincense and myrrh we'd brought to trade on our journey. Perhaps they could use them to trade for something useful for their child. We left them, and I remember feeling a profound and deep sense of hope. Our encounter had grounded us in what seemed to be both simple and true. Despite the sense of hope they instilled in me, I worried about the gifts we had given as we travelled home. They could be seen as symbols of the kind of worldly power we didn't like. Gold, power based on wealth. Frankincense, power based on arrogance, the elite acting like gods. Myrrh, an oil to anoint the dead. Power based on putting the fear of death into people. I hoped the little family we met simply used the gifts to buy food or clothes, or maybe even a proper crib for the baby. When we saw them, they had to lay the poor thing in a food trough filled with hay. We returned home, but never forgot our visit. In fact, as the years passed, we became more inspired by what we encountered in that stable. We each became the heads of our families, and put family and the welcoming of strangers first in everything we did. At the same time, we made no secret of our weaknesses and failings. Certainly we were leaders and took that responsibility seriously, but we did not pretend to be anything we weren't. We aimed to be straightforward and honest. We treated everyone, rich or poor, strong or weak, with respect and kindness, and it seemed to work. We sought to earn respect by our honesty and humanity, rather than imposing it with bluster and fear. Life was not always easy, but if you're not trying to be something you aren't, life and the problems that come with it are nowhere near as complicated as they sometimes seem. Despite the responsibilities I had as head of my family, I always had itchy feet. I longed to travel and explore more. Many years later, when my eldest son reached adulthood, I decided that we should go exploring together. And as I had always wondered what had happened to that little family and the hungry baby, we set out for Jerusalem. As we neared the great city, we began to hear stories of unrest. We were told to take care. The locals were volatile, and the Romans were jumpy. Apparently there was a rogue rabbi breaking laws and preaching heresy. There were stories of miracles, exorcisms, and healings. Most people thought he was a scoundrel. A few thought he was the Messiah. We arrived on a Friday. The city was hotter, dirtier, and more crowded than ever, because it was almost Passover, a great Jewish festival. We rested just outside the city walls to drink water. The noise coming from the city began to increase, and suddenly a crowd of people erupted from the city gates just by us. They were jeering and shouting and spitting at a man who was hauling a huge piece of wood on his way, presumably to be crucified. Roman soldiers were there not really to protect him, simply to make sure that he got to the place of crucifixion alive. The poor man dropped the huge piece of wood and slumped to the ground, exhausted. An elderly woman stepped forward and bent down by him for a moment. She held his bloodied, scarred face in her hands and simply looked at him. There were tears in her eyes, but her look was full of love. In that moment, I was back in that stable in Bethlehem. This was the exhausted young mother. This was the hungry baby. A Roman soldier grabbed the woman by her arm and threw her aside. He struck the man and made him continue his tortuous journey with the huge piece of wood. As the man and the jeering mob slowly climbed the hill to the place of crucifixion, my son and I followed at a distance. We sat overlooking the place of execution. I had told my son the story of our journey to Jerusalem all those years ago many times. As we sat in the shade of a tree, I told him that I was convinced that the man about to be crucified was the hungry baby in the story he knew so well. We sat in deep silence for many minutes. Then he spoke. "What does all this mean, then? Your visit to that little family influenced your whole life. You shaped everything you are around the simple lessons you learned in that stable. Family, welcoming strangers, hospitality, the vulnerability of truthfulness and honesty. What does it all mean now? Listen to his screams of pain. Look at him, dying in agony. It simply doesn't work, Father. I'm sorry to say this, but you have been a fool." I caught my breath. I would never have spoken to my father in such a way. I was confused. Part of me was offended that my son would speak to his father in that way, and part of me was proud that I had brought up a son who felt he could be so honest with me. As the sky darkened and the crowds dispersed, we walked towards the place of execution. There was the woman we had seen earlier, being held by a man, both weeping. Nearby there were other women keeping vigil. There was even a Roman soldier who was weeping as well. Life was slowly ending for the man on the cross. All we could hear was breathless whimpering, like the sound of an exhausted, hungry baby. "You are right, son. I have been a fool, but I would not change anything. Look at his mother. Look at his friends. Look at that Roman soldier, a stranger. We can see that their hearts are broken, but they are here. There is love here. Just as there was love in the darkness of that bleak stable, I can see love even here. This splintered, bloody cross is huge, but the love that enfolds it is bigger." I approached the exhausted mother at the foot of the cross and gave her a piece of cloth for her tears and also a small gold coin. "If I had some frankincense and myrrh, I would give them to you as well." I kissed her head and walked away. For some reason, I felt the same sense of hope I felt when I walked away from the stable on the night he was born. If the old wise man had surveyed the wooden cross, perhaps he would have thought back to that cold, stark stable where Jesus had been born. In the midst of the pain and grief of the cross, maybe he would sense the same love that had inspired him in Bethlehem. As we reflect on this story, may we never lose sight of that love which enfolds us in death as in life, and see that because of that love, however dark things may be, new life and hope are never far away. Lord, teach us to seek you, and reveal yourself to us when we seek you. For we cannot seek you unless you first teach us, nor find you except you reveal yourself to us. Let us seek you in longing, and long for you in seeking. As we discover you in life, may we also discover you in death. Let us find you in love, and love you in finding. O Jesus Christ our Lord. Amen.